Eric Smith is an MSU Jazz Studies student here at Michigan State University. He's got a new EP out called Hey There Miss. We're going to hear the title cut a little bit later on in the hour. Eric's backed up by Louis Leager, Ari Title, and Zach McKinney, and they are our Live Music Friday performers here today on Current State. It's great to have you guys with us, and we look forward to hearing more throughout the course of the hour. I'm Mark Bayshore, Current State, three times every weekday here on WKAR. On the last weekday of every month, we review the top Michigan political news stories of that month. To help me do that today, Kathleen Gray of the Detroit Free Press and Freep.com returns. Kathy, good to see you.
Hi, Mark.
And Zach Gorchow also is back with us. Zach's from Gongwer News and Gongwer.com. Hi, Zach.
Morning.
There was another flurry of road funding efforts just this week. As a matter of fact, we're looking back at the whole month, but this happened really this week. The Michigan Senate took a stab at funding a bill that had already passed the House last week. Can you describe what was in this, Kathy?
Well, it's called the 600-600 plan, and it means $600 million in new revenue and a $600 million shift from the general fund, which would add up to $1.2 billion for roads for a year. But the plan doesn't get fully phased in until 2021. It includes a rather modest gas tax hike, and the thing that is causing so much consternation in the Senate is a 40% hike in registration fees.
Mm-hmm. And I take it the existing revenue is already being spent on some number of things. Has the existing revenue that the proponents of this bill want to spend on roads, has that been identified?
No, it is not. And based on the changes that were under discussion on Tuesday, the existing revenue component would not come online for years. This is going to be labeled a $1.2 billion plan. It's really a $600 million plan when you get right down to it. That there will probably, I don't think Governor Snyder will still be in office when the general fund commitment comes into place. It'll be almost an entirely new cast of characters in the legislature.
So they would be obligated to target where this $600
well, they
came
would,
from.
But it can always be changed. I mean, it's just it would be a simple statutory change. You know, if the economy goes down, revenues go down, I just can't imagine they're going to sign away $600 million from the general fund for roads when they're going to have a bunch of holes to fill. So it's really an uncertain thing whether that other $600 million would actually come to be.
Mm. And I take it some number of Democrats fear that the existing revenue could very well come from social programs that they feel are very important.
Absolutely. Yeah. They say that it could come to harm local governments because revenue sharing comes out of general fund, and that funds things like police and fire. They fear that it also will come out of public education. As a result, I think that there's only been one Democrat in the House who has supported it. There are very few, if any, Democrats in the Senate who are going to support it, but the Republicans have a pretty large majority. But they haven't been able to come up with the votes for this plan, so we'll see next week.
Well, earlier this week, Republican House Speaker Kevin Cotter was still hopeful that lawmakers could reach a compromise this week. Here he is.
I think it would be a shame to get this close because I think there's going to be credit for nothing if it's not a signed solution. So we have to get it across the line.
Where does that stand here on Friday?
Well, here's the simple difference. The Senate had passed a plan in June. The $600 million in new revenue would have come entirely from raising the gasoline tax. The House plan, which was passed last week, $400 million in new revenue from registration fee hike, $200 million from the gas tax. Will they meet in the middle? That's the question. The Senate doesn't like the registration fee hike. The House thinks that's a better move because it's a more stable source of revenue given declining gasoline consumption. But it's a politically much more difficult thing. That's something people will notice is an all at once, when they renew their vehicle registration, $50, $100, maybe more. All at once, as opposed to when you fill up, it's just a little bit more each time.
But did it get talked about much after Tuesday?
Oh, sure.
Okay.
The Republicans and Democrats in the Senate were caucusing all week long. They didn't have a full contingent of membership in. There were a couple of senators out, so they say they delayed any vote on it until next week. We'll see if they take it up next week.
Flint's water woes continued to occupy a lot of airtime and column inches here this month. What's happened most recently, Kathy?
Well, the House and the Senate approved $9.35 million to help the city of Flint reconnect to the Detroit water system. And that happened. People are starting to get Detroit water out of their taps now. But there are a lot of investigations that are going on as to how this whole thing came to be. The EPA had been warning the state for months, even a year, that the Flint water was suspect, that there were that they were worried about it, that lead was leaching into the pipes that was going into people's homes. So there's state's investigations. There are there's been calls for federal investigations, and we'll see what happens.
Congressman Dan Kildee has said that he has requested an EPA investigation into the episode. Kildee is, of course, the U.S. congressman representing Flint and in that part of the state. Is that likely to happen?
Just be guessing. So I'm not going to make any predictions there. But the governor has formed a
task force.
I think most people would look at it and say there's some pretty, you know, independent-minded people on here. I mean, you've got the head of the Michigan Environmental Council, Chris Kolb, on there. I don't think anybody would say he's allied with the governor. This is a very liberal, former Democratic member of the legislature. So I think, you know, when you look at the makeup of that panel, it should be, you know, interesting to see what it comes up with. You've got a mayoral election in Flint coming up next week. There's a lot of people wondering, will the mayor of Flint survive given this, you know, storm around him, even though he's up against a total newcomer? That'll be an interesting
item. He has to some extent criticized, though, the way this unfolded. He was both a part of the landscape and a part of the decision, I'm led to believe. Correct me if I'm wrong. But, I mean, Darnell Early, the former emergency manager, has taken a lot of heat here in the last few days over this.
Dane Walling did not have any legal authority at the time to make the decision to switch to Flint River Water because there was an emergency manager in place. However, he was very much part of the sales pitch to the public that this would work. I mean, there was a very visible picture of him pushing the button at the water plant to switch the water over to the Flint River. He was part of raising the glasses of Flint River water, and he's quoted several times saying the water would be safe. Now, he said, of course, since then we assumed it would be treated properly, but the fact, you know, these are not things you want to have to defend when you're up for election.
I'll point out that Darnell Early, the former Flint emergency manager and the current emergency manager for the Detroit Public Schools, will be our guest Monday morning here on Current State on WKAR. This whole landscape involves Darnell Early, and as I said, his name came up a number of times this week. Last week, he denied being the one responsible for the decision, and I know that comment earned a rebuke from State Senator Jim Ananick. What did these two guys say? How did that unfold?
Well, it's all about timing and who made what decision when. The emergency manager prior to Darnell Early was the one in charge when the decision was made to go to the Karagandhi water system. And there's just a lot of controversy over who made the decision on going to the Flint water. But also involved in this is Detroit's role in it. And Detroit pretty much cut the city of Flint off, said that when they decided to go to the Detroit water, or when they decided to go to this other water system, that they were exercising their contract right to cut the city of Flint off in the next year. Mm-hmm. So there, you know, it's pretty convoluted at this point as to who is what, where, when, why, how.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And plenty of calls for investigations to sort it all out, I suppose. Kathleen Gray of the Detroit Free Press, Zach Gorchow of Gongwer News. It's Current State's Month in Review. I'm Mark Bayshore. Parole reform was a hot topic this month in Lansing. There's something of a legislative showdown over its House Bill 4138 at the Capitol. What are the big pieces of this parole reform legislation, Zach?
Well, the biggest thing is the idea that when an inmate reaches his or her minimum release date, so let's say someone's sentenced to 20 to 30 years in prison, once they hit 20 years, the Department of Corrections will do a risk analysis to determine how likely they would be to succeed on the outside if released. And if that comes up well, they would be released. There wouldn't be you know, applying to the parole board or coming up for parole during that 20, you know, that final 10 years, up to 30 years of incarceration.
Right now, parole boards apparently have the authority to keep people in jail for, I think the wording is, substantial and compelling reasons.
Right.
And this,
and
this would alter that.
There's been a lot of questions about, well, you know, what's the point of sentencing someone to a range of years if, you know, all signs show they're going to be, succeed upon release. They've been a model inmate. Why are you, just keeping them in until 30 years? What's the rationale there? So you have lined up on one side a series of Republican and Democratic legislators who are pro-reform, the Department of Corrections and the governor, which is pro-reform. On the other side, you have law enforcement, specifically the Attorney General Bill Schuette, a bipartisan coalition of prosecutors and county sheriffs, saying, this is a terrible idea. You're going to be taking the discretion away from the parole board. That's been heatedly disputed. But the idea being, let's let the parole board make the decision. There's inevitably going to be somebody who's released that's going to commit a terrible crime.
Mm-hmm. Let's listen to Attorney General Schuette and his comments on it.
We oppose this autopilot parole, this cruise control parole that would release dangerous criminals early in our communities and jeopardizes the safety of the citizens of the state of Michigan.
So is there more support or more resistance, just broadly speaking?
It's pretty well divided.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got law enforcement and Schuette taking the tough-on-crime stance, and the legislature and the governor on the other side of the issue. It's a pretty big showdown, and the legislature is not happy with Bill Schuette because he has been taking some pretty serious shots at this legislation and at them for passing it.
What's the timeline?
Well, the Senate still has to take it up. The House has passed it on a pretty bipartisan fashion. The Senate still has to take it up. I think it's going to change in the Senate because the Senate is got more tough on crime type of senators in there than the House.
Let's switch gears here to prevailing wage. The discussion over repealing prevailing wage here in Michigan got really interesting this month. Supporters of the existing law claimed that the petition drive to outlaw it had too many duplicate and invalid signatures. How did this unfold?
Pretty surprising situation. People who want to keep the prevailing wage basically took the sample of signatures the state uses to analyze whether enough were collected, as well as the full 390,000-some signature list, put them into a database, scrubbed them, and found, what they say is rampant duplication. Almost 19,000 people signing it twice, or something like 10 instances of, people signing it, 10 times. I mean, it's really unusual. Irregularities and problems, and there'll probably be a Board of State Canvassers hearing next week to look at the petition, and the people who collected the signatures are sort of nervously saying, no, we think everything's right, but the folks who scrubbed this are some of the best in the business. They would have to have really monumentally screwed up to be wrong, and they are really confident they are right.
We're running out of time here, but I do want to devote a couple of minutes here to the governor's Detroit school plan. He announced his plan to fix Detroit schools. The DPS is contending with hundreds of millions of dollars of debt and all of the repercussions that go with that. Here is Governor Snyder. Here is Governor Snyder with his remarks from the day the plan was released.
Before I'd even talk about finances, though, I think the bigger challenge is what do you do with all these kids? We want them to get a good education.
What did Governor Snyder propose here, the big pieces?
Well, the big thing is that he's saying that the district is going to need $715 million in state assistance over the next 10 years. The idea being the local millage on commercial and non-principal residence property, instead of going to the state school aid fund, which is what happens in all other school districts, would be used to pay down the district's debt, which is massive. This means less money for other schools around the state. Eventually, after a period of years, the district would go back to a regular elected school board, but there will be this kind of layered system where a central manager sort of does overall planning for both, you know, the regular schools, but then also looks at what's happening with charter schools. The big change from what he talked about in April is that there would no longer be a mandatory common enrollment system for charter schools and the traditional schools. That would not be voluntary. The charter schools really resisted that, but there's been some discussion that, you know, how well is that even going to work on a voluntary basis?
We're just about out of time. Talk to me about the legislative response to this. Where what are you hearing?
Well, I think that there's certainly always angst when legislators are faced with the prospect of their school districts losing money. And this comes on the heels of the legislature bailing Detroit out and helping out of its bankruptcy. So there's always that issue.
A lot of legislators have heard plenty over the years about sending money to Detroit, and it's been an ongoing source of tension.
Yes.
Has it not? And it's not done yet.
No.
So, well, we want to thank both of our guests, Kathleen Gray of the Detroit Free Press and Freep.com, Zach Gorchow of Gongwer News and Gongwer.com. It's been our October month in review. Kathy, Zach, thanks very much.
Sure, Mark.
Thanks.
Your face is like a pretty, beautiful Italian place. Beautiful, always I know. Your eyes are like two knowing, glowing, tempting blueberry pies. Beautiful, always I know. I will be here, there, and everywhere. Always I know. I will be here, there, and everywhere. Always I know. You're beautiful in every way. I don't wanna change you. I just wanna change me for you. I will be here, there, and everywhere. Always I know. Yeah, yeah. I will be here, there, and everywhere. Always I know. I will be here, there, and everywhere. Always I know. Oh, darling, no. Love will be here, there, and everywhere. Always I know.
Eric Smith on acoustic guitar and singing the vocal there, backed up by his compatriots Louis Leaguer on bass, Ari Title is on Fender Electric, and drummer Zach McKinney. Eric has put together a new CD with these guys called Hey There Miss, and there are Live Music Friday performers here on WKAR's Current State. More from Eric Smith and friends here coming up before the end of the hour on WKAR's Current State. Amel's Italian Restaurant on East Michigan Avenue is closing its doors after more than 90 years. Current State's Katie Cook takes a look back at Amel's rich history with owner Paul Grusco.
Amel's is the oldest restaurant in Lansing. It was the first city to get its beer and wine license after Prohibition ended. It's attracted celebrities, politicians, and musicians like the Pointer Sisters and Frankie Valli. And it all started with a little fruit stand. When Emil DeMarco immigrated here from southern Italy, he found work in Indiana and then moved to Lansing to work for Motor Wheel. When he'd saved enough money, he opened a fruit stand right in front of the building where Amel's restaurant stands today. I went to Amel's to talk to the current owner, Amel's grandson, Paul Gresko. Here's what he knows about the original Amel's.
I don't know, and I can't find what was in here when he was out front at the fruit stand, but as soon as this was vacant, he came in and started not a restaurant. He did serve food. He had ham sandwiches, spaghetti and meatballs, and bean soup, and that was it. It was just a three-item menu plastered behind the bar. If you wanted it, fine. If you don't, that's fine, too. But he served Coke and ice cream, and he had tobacco products, just sundries, just kind of an all-around, I don't want to say general store, but just an all-around neighborhood place you can hang out.
What's your earliest memory of the restaurant?
Well, there's many, but the earliest memory of the restaurant would be when I would run in, yell out my grandfather's name, Grandpa, and he'd always, always, without fail, give me a silver dollar. That thought will never leave me.
And then when did you start helping out around the restaurant?
Well, you know, my father and my mother always instilled work ethic, so if I really wanted something bad enough, I could come down to the restaurant. Back then, they delivered Coca-Cola in wooden crates. So I'd take the wooden crate, turn it upside down, hop on the wooden crate, and do dishes so I could reach the counter. So that was not every Saturday. But if I wanted to go to the movies or play miniature golf or something, I'd wash, you know, dishes all day, and I'd have a couple of bucks. And back then, that was pretty big money.
Any other funny stories or memorable moments that you'll always hold on to?
I can remember, yeah. They had this great idea that they were going to, well, they did put in a chair on a railroad track where the bartender could just sit down the whole night and it would just go back and forth, back and forth. But they didn't consider that it was slow. It wasn't this machine that just whipped right down the bar and whipped right back. So customers came in, and they were awed by the machine, but if they sat in that darn chair, it would, you know, you could walk faster, you know, so that really the service was poor. And then you had this track behind the bar with a chair because they said, screw this, we can rate in the customers a lot faster and obviously make a lot more money if this darn thing was there. It was in the State Journal and everything, but by 6 weeks, they tore it out.
Why is Amel's closing?
Well, a couple of reasons. I've always had a dream to take these recipes kind of to the next level. The Kalamazoo Street Farmers Market has just rebuilt the inside of their building. So I went in there and checked it out. It's pristine, all brand new equipment. The kitchen's huge. And then I really got the idea and excited. You know, man, I could put my sauces and soups and ready-to-eat meals and frozen, you know, like frozen lasagnas and cannellonis and stuffed shells like that and put them in the farmer's markets and smaller grocery stores. And I'm not real good with computers, but eventually I learned to do it online. And then my lease was up, and, you know, there's a number of factors why I decided to do it now. And if I signed the lease and it was kind of held for another 5 years or so, I'll be 5 years older. And I just feel that the time is right, and if I never do it, even if I fail, I'll always regret it.
What are your favorite recipes to make that you'll take from the restaurant?
The Alfredo sauce. The original tomato sauce, of course. I got a wonderful meat-based sauce, a Diablo sauce, the minestrone, the chicken tortellini, the bean soup. The bean soup was the original. I would always have that because that's what my grandfather started with way back in the day. And those are my faves. But the frozen stuff obviously isn't going to be like right out of the kitchen, but the lasagna is great, the stuffed shells, cannelloni, manicotti. There'll be several frozen ready-to-eat meals and soups and sauces at your farmers markets and grocers pretty soon.
Any Italian cooking tips or secret ingredients you care to reveal?
if you want to make a good tomato sauce, don't start it with hamburger. Start it with fresh garlic. Put a little bit of sausage in there. And always use some sort of meat that has a bone in it. The marrow from the bone really adds the flavor of your tomato sauce.
Amos has had a few pretty well-known guests over the years. Al Capone was here. Anyone else?
Oh, I don't know. You're a little young. You probably wouldn't remember Soupy Sales or Danny Thomas. Jeff Daniels, you probably know. He's been in here several times.
And what did your grandfather, Emil, tell you about Al Capone when he was here?
Well, my grandfather really didn't. It was my mother. He was very polite, never demanding, but he always needed to sit at a certain table way in the back in the corner, and he needed to, from what my mother states, to have his back to the wall. Now, if there was somebody in that particular chair or booth, my grandfather knew it, and Al never said a word. My grandfather would go over to those people and just say, you know, there's somebody here who's my friend, and he needs to sit in this booth. Would you mind if I buy you a beer or a Coke or something just to kind of move over to the next table? And they always did. I use the word friend. My grandfather really wasn't his friend, but when Al came to town, every once in a while he'd get his hair cut next door, but always would stop in for spaghetti. And he'd have a spaghetti and Coke, wouldn't stay long, and he was on his way. Here's the pictures of when my grandfather moved in from the fruit stand. He had a little celebration there with the crepe paper, and that's it. That's what it looked like back in 1927, 28. And the tin ceiling, see how ornate that is? That's still up there, but my uncle and my father put all the air conditioning ducts, all the cables, all the wiring above the drop ceiling. So to get rid of all that would cost a fortune. So, and that's Emil right there. That's my grandfather. And this is my grandmother Carmilla. That's my mom Julie. That's my Aunt Mary, my Aunt Ellen, and of course, Emil. It's right there. See, bottle of beer, 16 cents.
You still offering that special?
You might get one for 16 cents. I take the mug and turn it upside down. You know that little indentation on the bottom? I'd fill that up for you.
What do you think it is about Emil's that has made it mean so much to Lansing?
Well, we're here for 94 years. That's quite a a feat in itself. We're the oldest restaurant in the city, still family owned. Just the service, the great food, and the friendships that I've made with the customers is beyond words.
For Current State, I'm Katie Cook.
This is Current State on 90.5 WKAR. I'm Mark Bayshore. It's a Live Music Friday. More from Eric Smith and friends coming up before the end of the hour here on Current State. The United States can safely boast one of the finest healthcare systems in the world, but it's also true there are enormous disparities in America when it comes to who's able to access and afford that care. Consistent health care is especially important for chronically ill children. Simply getting their kids to the doctor or hospital can be difficult for families without reliable transportation. A program in Lansing is trying to fill that gap. The Davies Project is a volunteer-driven program that's built around volunteer drivers. Here to explain is Pam McClouchich, the executive director of the Davies Project. We're also honored to have the program's namesake with us as well. Dr. Deli Davies is a pediatrician by trade, a former MSU department chair, and now vice chancellor for academic affairs at the University of Nebraska Medical Center. Pam, Deli, welcome back.
Thank you.
Nice to see you, and welcome back to East Lansing, Dr. Davies. You're a pediatric physician, So you know firsthand the challenges that a lot of families face trying to get their give their kids the best care possible. And at the heart of this is transportation. What's your view on that? What do you see happening there that poses a challenge?
So here's the problem, Mark. We have a situation where a lot of children who are sick, have cancer, have chronic diseases like Crohn's disease or other conditions where they need to see physicians regularly. We see a big disparity in terms of those who show up and those who do not show up for their appointments. And what we've noticed are that those who tend to miss their appointments are children who typically are uninsured or are on Medicaid. And about a few years ago when I was department chair, we actually worked with the community and we did focus groups to identify why these children were missing appointments, because this actually has real implications for their health care. There are numerous studies that have shown that if you miss your appointments, you're more likely to have failure of cure of your cancer or your other chronic diseases don't respond as well. At least a strong association between missed appointments and those conditions. So when we did these focus groups, the number one reason we found was transportation. Mm. They just, you know, many of them would be perhaps families where they have no vehicle or single vehicle, and they have maybe one parent who is working and needs the car, and they have other children. And so they have to really juggle between a number of factors to determine whether they can actually bring the children in to be cared.
Pam, you were a guest on this program about a year ago. You were just starting out at the helm of the Davies Project. What have you accomplished in the past year?
A year ago when we were here, we had not started working with any families yet. We were still getting our structure in place. We are now working with 36 children and their families, using about 12 drivers to get them to appointments. It's been transforming for the families. It's been transforming for the drivers. Everything we do at the Davies Project is about making an impact on the isolation these families are experiencing as they care for their sick children. So the fact, even though it's a simple ride, it's the relationships that are developing, too, between the drivers and the patients and the parents. It's huge. So they're doing well. They're doing better medically, but they're also feeling like they have support in the community.
What makes the service you offer a better option for people than something like Uber or even public transportation like buses?
It's personal. The families have somebody that they can actually talk to and open up to about what they're experiencing. They have repeat drivers who they are building relationships with, and it's just a much more friendly way of delivering transportation. And you don't have to do transfers, and you don't have to put out money ahead in hopes that the reimbursement's going to come in before your family's out of money again. It's a very easy way to get these families to their care.
We're talking today about the Davies Project. It's a nonprofit program that provides reliable transportation for families with chronically ill kids. The aim is to ensure those kids can consistently make their appointments and receive regular medical treatment. Our guests are Pam McClouchich, Executive Director of the Davies Project, also the namesake, Dr. Delly Davies, former MSU Department Chair, now with the University of Nebraska Medical Center in Omaha. Delly Davies, it seems that transportation is really just the first step toward helping families who are facing huge medical challenges. Once they penetrate the healthcare system, then what do they need to know? What kinds of hurdles do people have to clear before they can even see a physician?
So, you know, one of the beautiful things about Lansing is there are a lot of great physicians here. There are a lot of great specialists who care for children, but a big problem is that accessing them is a real challenge, figuring out who's who and where they're at. And I think that's very confusing for families. And one of the other things we identified that families like is this notion of having a care coordinator or a navigator, somebody who can help them identify where these resources are and how they can access these physicians. Because what they end up doing, many of them, is going to a place outside the community where all the specialists are located under one roof, because it's easier to figure out, you know, where they're going. So I think that one of the great mysteries of our community here is we have such great people, such great families here, but they're not as well connected to one another, at least from the family's point of view. I recognize there's a lot of work going on to change that.
Mm-hmm. Pam, you've lived this scenario. Your son is a cancer survivor.
Yes.
What was the experience of navigating the health care system for you and your family? What resources did you have?
What was very clear to me at the time was that we had every resource we needed to manage our son's healthcare situation. And it was still the scariest, hardest thing we've ever had to go through in our life.
Even with the resources.
Even with all the resources. So going in and out of the clinics and watching other families who were there who clearly did not have what we had. And you could see children who were missing appointments. You could hear about the passing of some children who maybe didn't have to die.
I understand you learned, I won't say witnessed, but you were aware of a situation like that.
Right. We were aware of a lot of things like that. But then starting to talk with other families that had other conditions that their children were being treated for, you become so aware that transportation is just a huge issue in just getting those families to the appointments and then starting to get them on the right track in providing the care their children need.
Where does your funding come from?
We've had some wonderful donors, just individuals who've given to us. We have a foundation in Pennsylvania that has supported us. We have had, the Pentecost Foundation has been wonderful. Jackson National Life, too. We really would like to partner with some of the business community members, see if we can get some business sponsors behind our work now. It's time to grow this.
And if somebody wants to volunteer drive,
that is
how
the
do
other
they go
hurdle.
About that? I mean, this is about volunteers.
Right. If you visit our website at www.thedaviesproject.org, you will be able to find all the information you need about becoming a volunteer driver. It's a very simple process. Right now, most of our drivers are retirees from teaching and social work backgrounds who really understand what we're about. We do need to grow our number of drivers. I would like to build our 12 up to 40 by the end of this year. Right now, we have children waiting in the wings that are ready to join our program, but we don't have the drivers yet to drive them.
And I understand there's talk of actually duplicating this model elsewhere.
Well, I think this is really the beautiful thing. If you look in the literature, this is a national problem. This is not a Lansing problem. This is a national problem. There are numerous studies that I've seen that have come out of Texas, from California, showing that the number one hurdle for children accessing healthcare is transportation. So if we can do this right in Lansing, then this will be a beacon of hope to children across the country. As Carlos Slim put it, I'm going to paraphrase him a little bit. You know, it's important to leave a better community to our children, but it's much more important to leave better and healthier children to our community.
You're in town for an event this evening. You're really just in town for just a matter of 12 hours or so here from Nebraska. And this is in support of the Davies Project. I noticed that instead of a fundraiser, you're calling it a friendraiser. Tell us more about
that. Well, I think that the notion behind that is the fact that, you know, we want friends. We want people who can buy into this, who can be volunteers and identify with the project. This particular event is not designed to raise a lot of money, but really to raise awareness, to raise friends of this project who could understand the challenges that the families are going through and support the whole notion of transportation for these families.
More information on the event. Is there still time for people to get on board?
Come to the door. We'll make sure you get in. It will be held at the Lansing Country Club tonight at 5:30, from 5:30 to 7:30. Dr. Davies is the keynote speaker, and it's just going to be a wonderful evening.
We've been discussing the Davies Project. It's an effort in the Lansing area to help families with children suffering from chronic illnesses who need reliable transportation to their medical appointments. Pam McClouchich is the executive director, and Dr. Deli Davies is the project's namesake, vice chancellor for academic affairs at the University of Nebraska Medical Center in Omaha. Who does Michigan State play next week?
I think it's November. Is it November 24th or something?
How about that? Okay. Very interesting. Best of luck to both of you. Thanks for being
Thank
with
you
us
so
today.
Much.
Thank you for having us.
It is a Live Music Friday here on WKAR, Current State, and we're joined today by MSU Jazz Studies students led by Eric Smith. Eric Smith, along with Ari Teitel, Louis Leger, and Zach McKinney on drums. Let's hear the band perform Hey There, Miss.
Hey there, miss, have you ever seen sky like this without you here in this place? The wind fell like a hurricane on my face. life alone with the birds. I've swam with the waves. I've watched as water cascades into a river. I've seen dust cover the snow in Rockies. I've walked hand in hand with the ocean. Spent a night on Mother Earth's bare floor. But their beauty didn't make me feel like yours. Yeah, you. Yeah, you. Hey. Like no one's ever heard me, like no one's ever loved. Must be the constellations in your eyes. Well, you're walking this way, it's a chance to say, hey, the mist, hey.
Hey There, Miss. The title cut from Eric Smith's latest EP. He is joined on bass by Louis Leager, on electric guitar by Ari Teitel, and on drums by Zach McKinney. Thanks for joining us, Eric. Good to see you.
Thanks for having me.
You're in the MSU Jazz Studies Department, class of 2017, studying piano with Xavier Davis. Tell us about your musical development here in choosing MSU.
I decided in high school that I decided I wanted to play music, try and do it for a living, because this is what I love to do. And I was looking around at schools, and someone suggested that I study jazz, and I thought that was a great idea. And so,
were you playing jazz in high school?
Not really.
Okay.
Kind of, but not in the sense that I am now.
Now I gotta confess, what you're playing now doesn't sound like jazz.
It's not. It does not. What we're playing now does not swing at all.
How do you divide that up? Can you say you're studying academically something really different from what you're performing?
Yeah, in terms of like the past few songs we played, I would definitely say that. Other songs, the line gets kind of blurred just because, you know, what you take in all these things, whether it's, you know, you're transcribing Oscar Peterson, you know, you're listening to Paul Simon, and you're also like, you know, in the College of Music, you're getting turned on to people like Shostakovich and like the Soweto Gospel Choir. Yeah. And so it just like it all comes in and it comes out however it wants to, I guess.
The lines have never been more blurred, I don't think. But you know what? That's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, you know, in our business, we have to assign labels to things. And
sure.
In the music business, they have to assign labels to things. And I think probably listeners end up assigning those labels. But at the on the ground level, I mean, these genres get mixed up and the lines get blurred.
Yeah.
They have been, really.
Yeah, especially with like things like YouTube and stuff. You can... Literally all those people I just mentioned, you can watch like videos of them performing live, like one after another. So it's really amazing.
Yeah. What inspired this EP here? When did you know you, how did this take shape exactly?
It really just started as something I wanted to have, something like solid, something physical that I can, you know, pass out to friends, grandparents, family, you know, venues and places to play, and then it just kind of turned into this, you know, well, if I'm going to do it, I might as well, like, not just do, like, a demo something, you know, and really put a lot of time into it.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think I started recording it in January of this year. And then trying to balance that in school. So I'd go in, like, once in January. Didn't have any time in February to go. Went in, like, twice in March. You know, once in April. So it's kind of, it's been kind of a long process in that respect.
We're talking with our Live Music Friday guest, Eric Smith. He's accompanied here by Louis Leger, Ari Teitel, and Zach McKinney. All are MSU Jazz Studies students here at Michigan State University. How do you approach singing, though? I mean, you just happen to be a singer as well. You play keyboard, you play guitar, and you sing. Do you take your singing as seriously as a jazz studies student? Do you take that as seriously, anywhere near as seriously as playing or composing or any of the other things?
I definitely love singing a ton. It's one of my favorite things to do. However, I'm here. I'm paying money, you know, to study at this amazing university. Our professors are just top professionals and top educators. I'm really lucky to be here studying this. And so I want to take advantage of that, you know, practice my piano stuff. So sometimes singing doesn't, a lot of times it doesn't, and guitar playing, it doesn't take precedent over my piano playing. And that's just, you can't do everything, you know, so.
Which is your main instrument, though? I mean, you've been performing on acoustic guitar and singing here today. I mean, are your chops better on the guitar or the piano?
Piano, for sure.
Well, I'm tempted to ask you to go over and sit down at the Steinway and pound away, for crying out loud. Versatile guy. Who are some of your favorite pianists?
In terms of, well, you know, I grew up, you know, as I feel like most people do, listening to, like, you know, Billy Joel, Elton John, you know, Paul McCartney, those guys. And then, you know, from that, I guess I kind of got into the jazz and classical side, you know. So from composers like Liszt, I love Liszt and Chopin's music. And Oscar Peterson is, like, one of my favorite pianists of all time.
Do you perform their works as well? Do you perform any Chopin, Liszt, or Oscar Peterson?
I'm working on the classical stuff. My chops aren't quite where I would like them to be to perform it. But Oscar Peterson, you know, you just transcribe his solos, which is like listening to it and then figuring it out on the piano and trying to sound like them. So then when it comes to improvise and make up a solo on your own, you have somewhere to pull from.
And did you encounter all of your other players here in East Lansing? Or did you know any of these guys beforehand?
I didn't know any of them beforehand. Ari and I, the guitar player, we actually grew up not too far from each other.
Where was that?
He was in West Bloomfield and I was in Birmingham.
Okay.
But we didn't meet until we got here.
Oakland County guys. Oakland County soul here on Current State.
Oh my God.
Your upcoming performance schedule includes a show December 3rd as part of an artist storytelling event at Scene Metro Space in East Lansing. And the next night, December 4th, you'll play with the MSU Jazz Orchestra with Jimmy Cobb on the bill. Just want to make everybody aware of that. If they want to learn more about your music, where can they find that out?
The website is musicbyericsmith.com, and that's Eric with a C, not a K.
Music by Eric Smith.
Musicbyericsmith.com. And that's where you can, if you want to order a physical CD, you can get it from there. If you want to, you can stream it on Bandcamp and SoundCloud, and it's all on that website. So if you go there, or my Facebook page, Eric Smith Music.
We want to thank pianist, guitarist, singer Eric Smith for being our Live Music Friday guest today, along with guitarist Ari Title, drummer Zach McKinney. It's the first time I think we've had a full drum set in the studio here, so that was fun. It's the second at the most, but I think it might be the first. Also, bassist Louis Leager. Eric Smith's new EP is called Hey There, Miss. We're going to have you guys play us out in just 1 second. I want to remind everyone that Delta Township resident Darnell Early has been appointed an emergency manager in Michigan twice, once in Flint, now in the Detroit Public Schools. He is contending with educational challenges in Detroit, but questions are still swirling over his role last year in switching Flint's water source to the Flint River. We will talk with Delta Township resident Darnell Early about the art of crisis management. Plus, an empty GM parking lot on West Saginaw is a little brighter now thanks to a new public art installation. We'll learn more about that Monday here on Current State. Eric Smith and friends, play us out. Have a great weekend. It's Current State on WKAR.
One, two, one. Well, I've flown with the birds. I've swam with the waves. I've watched this water cascade.